Hello everyone and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Youth basketball is often disorganized, focused solely on winning, and generally frustrating. But at Pro Skills Basketball, our mission is to change that culture. We strive to provide a more professional experience for parents, players, and coaches. One focused on organized communication, fun, mutual respect, and personal growth, on and off the court. And the Youth Hoops Pod is a part of that. This podcast covers a wide range of youth basketball topics, from high school and AAU basketball to college recruiting, NCAA, NBA, overseas basketball, mental health and performance, leadership, and much more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. We hope you enjoy.
Okay, welcome back everyone to the Youth Hoops Podcast brought to you by Pro Skills Basketball. On episode 3 of the Recruiting Roundtable, we are joined by Coach Kevin Hopkins, the head men's basketball coach at Muhlenberg College. Coach, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Coach K Hop, thanks for being here. First question before we dive into how you're recruiting the Mules. Just wanted to touch base on your experience as a student athlete. You know, why don't you touch on kind of your recruiting process? I know you were being recruited by Division I and Division III schools before you ultimately chose, you know, Amherst and the NESCAC. So why don't you touch upon, you know, some of the factors and decisions you had to make when you went through that process?
For sure. It was a lot different than it is today. You know, even as far as game film and stuff, it was VHS, it was full games, there weren't as many highlights and stuff like that. So recruiting was a lot harder for coaches. Also, I only played a year of AAU. So my dad passed away from cancer when I was 15. So I didn't end up playing prior to my junior year. And then between junior and senior year, I ended up playing on a AAU program, the Albany Capitals in the area, that was kind of the best player from each of the local high schools, a lot of Division III guys. Some guys that are still in coaching. Jeff Duran up at Suffolk was actually one of the guys on that team. And then when I started getting recruited, it was low-level Division I, some Division IIs were sniffing around, and then Division III. But my mom did a tremendous job. Academics were a very important factor. So, you know, at that point, recruiting was still like sending letters to the house, sending mail, that kind of thing. We weren't doing email. We weren't texting. It was call the house phone. So she kind of filtered everything for me. And, you know, there were some schools that sent stuff that I never even saw because she'd go through the academic rankings. And if they weren't good enough, it just wasn't going to be an option for me because kind of realized I wasn't going to the NBA. So I was going to use basketball to try to get the best education I possibly could. And then it came down to, at the time, some of the Ivies that were interested were talking about me going to prep school. I didn't really know much about prep school. It also wasn't as big as it's blown up the last 10 to 15 years, where it's kind of the norm for especially big kids who are trying to mature and get that extra year of growth in before going to college. And having a single mom and two siblings, I didn't want to have her paying for prep school. I didn't know anything about grants or scholarships or anything like that. So decided I want to go to college right away. And then I was kind of weighing, you know, my AAU coach, Jim Zullo, sat us down and had a talk with a bunch of us that were getting recruited and said, you know, do you want to go Division I where they own you and you're getting up at 5 a.m. doing workouts, et cetera? Or do you want to go Division III where you can have the whole academic experience? You can have a social life. You can be on top of your studies. You're not away from class that often and you can compete at a high level. And for me, what it really came down to looking at, I think the final two for me were really kind of Rochester and Amherst when I got down to it. Because something that was important for me was I wanted to go somewhere where we had a chance to play for a national championship. When I looked at the other options, I thought, you know, they might be schools that maybe win the league once and go and lose the first round, something like that. But going to Rochester, going to Amherst would have given me a chance to play for a national championship. I ended up choosing Amherst, worked out really well. Unfortunately, my freshman year, we actually lost to Rochester in the Sweet 16, and Jeff Duran was on that team. After freshman year, I might have questioned it a little bit, but then sophomore year, we went to the Final Four. My junior year, we won a national championship, and then senior year, lost in the national championship. So my 4 years of college, we ended up going 111-12, probably the biggest reason was I played with a kid, Andrew Olson. He was two-time National Player of the Year, pass first point guard, which was great for me as a big guy running the court. He used to throw like three-quarter court alley-oops that were right under the rim. I could go up and dunk them, but people were impressed with the dunk, and I was always impressed with the pass. The guy's throwing it like 80 feet in the air on the money with touch. He's actually the shooting coach for the Cavs now. And that team, you know, I also played with Matt Goldsmith. He's the head coach down at College of New Jersey. Our assistant during college, one of them was Luke Flakertzi, who's the head coach at Rochester. Mark Gilbride, who's the head coach at RPI now. Kobe Altman, who's the GM of the Cavs, was an assistant. And then Mike Rainiac, who was head coach at SUNY Purchase, and now he's the head coach of the We Are D3 TBT team. So a lot of guys that are still involved in basketball. Yeah.
Humble name drops, huh? Humble name drops right there.
My senior class is, we had five of us and we all ended up going playing overseas in Germany. And then the class behind us, we had three guys that ended up going playing overseas. So you're talking about a Division III team with eight guys that ended up going playing professionally in Germany. And that's not humble name drop. That is pointing out the fact that it was not my doing that we were doing. It was those guys.
I joke, but I mean, that touches on something that I think is really important for everybody to hear. You know, the fact that, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, but you chose to go, you know, the Division III route, where, you know, maybe you can have some sort of college experience outside of basketball, but basketball was still really important to you, while also knowing that your best chances at winning were going to be at a really, really good university that was going to set you up, you know, for the next 40 years and also be successful on the basketball court. So, you know, I think that's a great kind of, you know, lesson for, you know, all these guys that are going through and think that they need to, you know, go to Division I in order to make something of themselves. I mean, you just said five guys on your team played professionally. You know, a bunch of those coaches ended up, you know, some in the NBA and some at head coaches at really good schools now. So I think that that's a lot there to unpack for some of these, you know, guys and student athletes that are going through it, thinking that for some reason that they won't be as successful if they choose the D3 route. So I think that's all great.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of guys from Division III that are in the NBA now. One of the guys I played with is working for Sam Presti. He's his right-hand man. One of the guys that was a coach at Amherst, played at Trinity in Connecticut, is a scout for the Knicks. There's a couple other guys that are Connor Johnson, that played at Amherst when I was a coach there, is the head coach of the Sixers G League team. So there's a ton of guys that are around. I don't think people necessarily always realize, like, Sam Presti is a D3 guy. When I was in the G League, a lot of the guys on the staff were saying they actually preferred hiring Division III guys because they were low maintenance and high work guys that would just get stuff done and didn't ask for anything in return. And that wasn't always the case with the scholarship guys. They said sometimes they get a guy from a big time Division I program, they think he'd be great, and first day he shows up, hasn't done anything. He's like, "Where's my gear?" And they're like, "What do you mean? You got to do some work around here." So I think there's a lot of value in coming from Division III, and it gives you a lot of transferable work skills no matter what industry you're going into. There's a lot of needing to figure it out. You know, going to Amherst really helped. It's a lot of critical thinking, reading, writing. The liberal arts education, I think, teaches you a ton, whether it's how to question ideas and how to defend them, how to communicate with people. I see a lot of my education from Amherst in my daily life as a coach. I always joke with people that if I was smarter, I wouldn't be a coach, because with an Amherst degree, what I'm getting paid to coach Division III doesn't necessarily line up with what some of my classmates are making working on Wall Street and lawyers and doctors and all the other things. But I do think it's been extremely beneficial for me.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome. Can you touch on the recruiting process during your time as an assistant coach at Amherst? Like, how did the process work from identifying the high academic student athletes early? And how did these athletes stand out to you during the process?
Great question. So that's one of the interesting things with Division III sometimes. As an assistant, you get hired and you're thrown into the fire, and there's not necessarily always a blueprint of here's how you have to do it. A ton of our recruiting was done through the high academic camps, the Ivy League prospect camps, whether that's Hoop Group. Brandeis used to be a big one, then got a little bit too big, so we didn't recruit it as much. A lot of it was relationships with prep school coaches. We also benefited that Coach Hickson had been at the same place for 40 plus years. He'd been to like 7 Final Fours, won a couple national championships, and just had a ton of connections out there. And he was great with people. He was great with relationships. So alums would reach out to him and talk to us about checking out certain guys, or, you know, guys that had been in the program before would have teammates at a school, or a lot of it was really just came down to connections. And then too, even towards the end, you know, Coach Hickson was coaching Johnny McCarthy, whose dad had played for him back in the day. And then Johnny's little brother, Timmy, ended up going. And so now he's coaching two kids of a guy that he'd coached already. Like, there is no blueprint for that when it comes to recruiting. That is, dad was close. They stayed in contact. He had kids, and they both ended up being good players. At the end of the day, it's really just finding the guys that fit what it is you're trying to do at that program. So when I was at Amherst, it was really like finding a point guard that could create, that was usually 6 foot or bigger, unless he was Andrew Olsen, All-American caliber player. Then it was find 6'5" wings that could shoot the ball and guard multiple positions, and then find bigs. Coach Hickson was great about finding the right people and finding the right character, and then building the program around that and kind of tweaking things depending on what the strengths of the players were. It wasn't a, we need to fit a square peg in a round hole. It was, we'll change the hole a little bit if we need to based on the person. But at the end of the day, a lot of it was really just the assistants would identify people. We'd have our list of guys. A lot of Coach Hickson was really involved. He'd be reaching out, calling guys, texting guys, building those relationships, learning about them, seeing if they're the right fit. We'd have guys come visit. We were big on having them play pickup with our team so that they could get a feel for the other guys. We would always tell guys in the office, like, don't worry about how you play. You got to remember these guys are 3-4 years older. They're stronger. They've been playing against college guys. They've been lifting. They should be better than you. If they kick your butt, like, that's not a bad thing. But it's really for you to get out there and see, you know, coaches can say what they want about their guys to recruits, but if guys get out there and play with them and they can see, they can be like, oh yeah, coach told me I'm better than Paul. I don't know if that's actually true or not. Like, maybe I don't want to come to this school. Or you could say like, oh, I see Jeff. I am better than Jeff, and I'll play over him, so I'm okay with that. Or Jeff's a senior and he's better than me, so he won't be here, so I'm not that worried. A lot of it was for the benefit of the recruit. And then afterwards, it allowed us to have conversations with recruits, or with recruits, what they thought of the guys, but then the guys, what they thought of the recruits. And most of the time, those were not even basketball questions. Those were character questions. Those were, you know, the basketball season's long season. It's one of the longest, goes both semesters, takes up a lot of breaks. Like, do you want to be around this person a lot? If you don't, you're going to have problems with your team chemistry, and it's not going to be a fun season. So, you know, there's, it rarely happened, but there was a couple times where guys had either they wouldn't say anything, which was not a good sign, or on occasion they said like, no, that guy's not for us, and we just wouldn't recruit that guy. We'd move on to the next one. I've carried that philosophy over to Muhlenberg. I think we've only had it once where a guy came to visit, and afterwards our guys were like, coach, no. And we didn't recruit the kid. He ended up going to another Division III institution, starting as a freshman on an NCAA tournament team. But to me, it wasn't worth the problems chemistry-wise to get the talent. Because to me, at the end of the day, you know, having good people in the program that want to be around each other is something that Coach Hickson really prioritized, and something that I've prioritized at Muhlenberg also.
Did you guys run into the same schools over and over again in recruiting, or was it kind of sporadic and random?
Yes and no. I mean, Williams was always in the mix. Middlebury, like, we always ran into NESCAC schools, ran into Patriot League, Ivy League a lot. And then there's always like random low level Division I non-academic scholarships that we would recruit against. Like, Amherst has a number of kids that turned down Division I scholarships because they prioritized academics. So they would get a low one offer to a non-academic school and they wouldn't take it because they valued the education. So it was kind of random at times. A lot of times it was bottom of the Ivy League or NESCAC, but it depended on each kid was unique. And I think that's one of the biggest things in recruiting is like no two situations are the same. You know, some schools like getting guys early. Others like to hang out and get them late. Some kids like to commit early. Some want to hang out and play their season. Like a lot of it just comes down to, as a coach, can you communicate with the player what you're looking for? And can the player communicate with you what you're looking for? Like I always try to ask recruits, you know, kind of what's your timeline for making a decision? Not that I'm going to impose one on you, but I want to know what your thought process is. If you want to go early, well, then we probably got to speed things up a little bit. If you tell me you want to wait until the end of your season to make a decision, well, then I don't need to be in a rush with you. I can focus on those other guys and kind of figure things out and get a lay of the land. But at the end of the day, you know, it comes back to the relationships and the communication piece. So the more communication there is, the stronger the relationship will be and the better it'll be for everybody.
Yep. I have something that you brought up there that I just want to get your thoughts on. I think I know this answer, but it's when people ask me sometimes, and this is from coaches or parents, you know, high school AAU coaches, parents, you know, is that guy a scholarship player? Being at Hamilton and CMU and you being at Amherst, like I automatically went to the Ivy Patriot League level when they said scholarship, because guys typically did not bring up Division II scholarships if they were looking at, you know, Amherst, Hamilton, you know, Carnegie Mellon. And if they did, that was kind of a trigger for me realizing that, you know, this probably isn't going to be a good fit because he doesn't value the academic, you know, piece of this. Is that something that you guys kind of explored? Like D2 wasn't even a, you know, thought for some of these guys. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some Division II schools out there that have very good academics. But for the most part, you know, an Ivy League education, Patriot League education compared to Amherst or Division II, what was your thought process with that, if anybody brought that up?
Yeah. We didn't get a ton of talk about Division II other than the NE10. And a lot of times it was Stonehill Assumption. Like they were pretty good academic, or Bentley for their business program, I think it was. But a lot of times they kind of made sense. When we would hear those things, again, like to me, we've talked with our team, with the head of our counseling center, and he was talking about implicit bias stuff, but he brought up this idea of like, we all have incomplete stories of each other. And that's the basis of a lot of our biases. That's where racism ends up being rooted in, is not fully understanding other people. And the more complete story we can have of each other, the better we'll be able to relate. So to me, when someone brings up those type of schools, it's not, oh, they're out. It's, let me figure out why they're talking about that. Like, what is it about that school that's appealing to them? Maybe it's a money issue and they don't realize that Amherst is need blind and gives grant aid, like full need goes, it's granted to you. It's not a loan. Other schools, you're going to take out a loan for a certain amount and that Amherst it's granted. So maybe it's just worth, okay, they're worried about finances. Let's talk to our financial aid office and see what it's going to cost to come here. Like we had multiple kids that played there that were basically on a full scholarship. They got full aid. It wasn't a basketball scholarship, but they weren't paying for school. So a lot of times to me, when people are bringing up stuff like that, like I know it goes around Twitter. There's like high school coaches that are pissed at, why do all these college coaches ask who else is recruiting? I'm like, make your own decision. I'm like, I ask who else they're looking at and who else is recruiting them to have an idea if we're in the right ballpark. Like that's it. Or to have a different discussion. Like if I say, who are you talking to? And they tell me they have 3 Division I scholarships. Well, then I'm recruiting the wrong kid. There's also like certain schools that, you know, like from Muhlenberg that we end up recruiting against that either we're in the right ballpark or we're never going to get that kid. Like if we're recruiting the same kid that Johns Hopkins and Swarthmore is getting and they have a spot on their roster and he's getting in academically, we're probably recruiting the wrong kid. Like we need to go recruit someone else. So again, to me, a lot of the questions in recruiting are just trying to get a more complete story of the other person and what they're looking for and see if it's the right fit. Like I tell, you know, this is my 4th year and we're on our 5th assistant coach, which I just found out last night. Our guy, Tim Kaiser, that went out to Adrian is now the acting head coach. There was a crazy story, but not how he envisioned being a head coach, but excited.
He's a Philly alum too, Tim Kaiser.
Yeah.
Just throwing that in there.
I'm trying to promote the brand, you know? acting head coach, throw it on the website. But I always try to tell guys, like, especially early in the recruiting process, let's get to know. I don't want yeses right away. Like, let's find out why the kid's not interested. And that is just as valuable to us as finding out that he is. Like, we don't want to waste each other's time. If you're not interested, just tell me. My feelings won't be hurt. Like, Coach Hickson always used to talk about recruiting as being similar to dating. Like, you first meet somebody, you both might be seeing other people, you're doing whatever. Eventually, one of you, things are going well, decides you want to be more serious. Well, you can't just start being more serious and never have a conversation, because the other person won't be on board. But you got to have a hard conversation. You got to say, hey, like, I really like you, I want to date you. And then the other person has to give some feedback. Yeah, I want to date you also. No, I don't want to date you. Or, hey, I'm not ready for that yet, right? It's the same thing recruiting. Coaches can tell players, hey, I really want you to go early decision. Coach, I'm not ready to do that. Coach, I want to do that. Coach, I'm not interested in your school. Kid could do that to us. Hey, coach, I want to go early decision. Yes, I want you to. No, I don't. Or, I'm not ready for that yet. And eventually, hopefully, you end up with that happy marriage where you're both on the same page and you have that discussion, and things work out the way they're supposed to. But I thought that was a great analogy that's always stuck with me, that has really resonated in the recruiting process. I think a lot of times, especially with the parents, that they usually get a chuckle out of the dating analogy, because they've been through it. And then, you know, they found that person and had the conversation. And so we try to encourage recruits as much as possible. Just be honest with us. We'll be honest with you. Coach Hickson always used to tell guys, which I stole and tell guys also, like, don't be afraid to ask hard questions as long as you're ready for hard answers. So don't be afraid to ask the coach, hey, I really want to come to your school. Do you want me or not? Just be ready that the answer might be, no, I don't. And if you're not ready for that answer, then you can't ask that question. But the sooner you can ask those kind of questions, the sooner you're going to find the place that's right for you, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think the financial aid piece you touched upon was an awesome point too, you know, that people sometimes don't understand that Division III does have essentially scholarship money that they can give a guy. It's not for the sport, you know, but you can go to school, you know, for very low costs. So that was a good point too.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're all exhausted of talking about COVID, but we'd probably be remiss to try and get a state of the program at Muhlenberg and how it's affected you guys over the past couple months. And, you know, what is the latest in terms of where you guys are at with practice, games, all that stuff?
The latest is we started classes yesterday. I haven't heard from any of our guys, so I'm assuming everything went well.
So in-person classes?
What's that?
In-person classes?
So I think about 2/3 of our classes are remote, and then 1/3 of them are either in-person or hybrid. Athletically, the Centennial Conference canceled our season and canceled postseason play. They left the door open for individual institutions to potentially play if they want to. So I think Muhlenberg has talked about trying to give our guys some type of competitive experience. What that looks like, I don't know. I imagine it would be maybe a week or two where we try to play. Maybe we do like a AAU tournament style weekend, or maybe we only schedule 2 or 3 games. I think there's a couple schools within the league that are exploring that. I know there's other schools that aren't interested, and I think there's some on the fence. Really, I think for our league right now, the priority is they haven't made a decision on spring sports. So they're really focused on figuring out what they're doing with spring sports first. And then I think they'll kind of go backwards from there. Of once spring sports are in place, they'll go to winter sports and then fall sports. But I think we're going to be able to practice next week. We're supposed to be able to start doing strength and conditioning stuff. We're following the NCAA return to play guidelines or whatever they are. So hopefully be able to get in the gym with guys. You know, it's been almost an entire calendar year where I have not seen our players at all in person, seen them virtually. We've been doing stuff about once a week, doing some mental performance stuff with the head of our counseling center, but really excited to see guys in person again. I think COVID has given us all a new appreciation for the sport that we love and being in a gym with guys, even if it's not a game. Like I would love to just be in a gym shooting around with the guys right now. Like no practice plan, no drills, just like be in the gym hanging out with people I like. I don't know if hopefully they feel the same way about me. I don't know. I'm a little old, so I'm probably not that cool for them, but yeah, COVID's been a mess. But I think too, there's been a lot of positives out of it. You know, it's given people a new appreciation for being able to play. And you know, I was texting one of our guys who's committed and they're playing games. And I just texted him. I was like, hey, like, make sure you enjoy it and have fun. Like you, hopefully you guys get to play all your games, but you don't know if your season will get shut down or not. So make the most of each opportunity. Enjoy the chance to get out there with your buddies, enjoy the chance to compete. I know I saw some high schools were like doing their senior day, the first game, that way they were sure to get it in. And even for me personally, as a coach, COVID's been great from a personal and professional development standpoint. There's been so many opportunities with clinics and coaches sharing great information. Guys that would not usually have time to get on clinics have been sharing. I've reached out to a number of coaches on social media or through people that I knew and had conversations with coaches that I never thought I would have, just because I had nothing else to do. So I was like, I'll just reach out to these people and see what happens. If they ignore me, that's fine. And so many of them got back because they had nothing to do and they wanted to talk about basketball also. So they were excited to get on the phone. So it's opened a lot of connections for me from a coaching standpoint to learn a lot and grow as a coach and hopefully be better for the guys once we are able to get back in the gym.
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of positive things there too that have happened. You know, the amount of coaches that have shared and virtually being able to get together on a Saturday at 9 a.m. and, you know, talk about defensive philosophies, you know, with other coaches, you know, in your league, outside your league, definitely fun. But you touched obviously about the recruiting aspect when you were a coach at Amherst. What are some things that are similar, you know, different from, you know, your time now at Muhlenberg, and how have you approached COVID this year? So really two parts, you know, how do you normally, you know, approach the recruiting process now that you're the head coach at Muhlenberg, and how has COVID changed that this year?
You know, you're not supposed to ask two-part questions in interviews, right?
I mean, you can figure it out. You're a smart guy. Amherst education.
It's a bad interview question. No, I have long-winded answers. I'll forget the second question by the time I answer the first.
I'll remind you.
So it's funny, when I interviewed at Muhlenberg, one of the questions in my interview was, so you're at Amherst, you guys don't really have to recruit. How are you going to recruit here? And I was taken aback by the question. Slightly offended is probably an understatement. And I was like, we still have to recruit. Like, we could have a team without recruiting. People will email us. We won't win the league and win at a high level if we're not recruiting. No matter where you are, there's always a bigger fish in the pond, right? So instead of recruiting against other Division Threes, maybe we're recruiting against the NE10, maybe we're recruiting against the Ivy League, maybe we're recruiting against the Patriot League. Like, you're still doing the same thing. I think no matter what institution you're at, you're always selling yourself as the coach, the guys on the team as the program, the alums also tie into that, I think. And then also the quality of education. Like, I think most schools, the kids that end up going there, it is a good educational opportunity for them. Like, they don't go to lesser schools. They don't go to schools they can't achieve at. They end up at the right place. So it's kind of cliche. Like, everyone's, oh, you'll get a great education here. 40-year decision, not 4-year decision. Like, that is a real conversation at every institution, because there's some kid that is the case for. You know, I try not to worry about like what other schools are telling people. Like, all we can do is, I think the biggest challenge for me for COVID has been guys haven't been able to come to campus and get a tour and meet our team. Like, to me, our team and our campus community is the biggest selling point at Muhlenberg. I don't think it's me. I don't think it's the professors. I think it's the other guys on the team. Like, you're going to spend so much time with them. Those are the guys you're hopefully going to end up like being in their wedding, seeing their kids be born. Like, for me, I still have multiple group chats with different topics from my roommates from Amherst. I've been in multiple weddings. They have kids now. Matt at TCNJS Twins. I've gone down to see the Twins a couple times. Like, that's what it is really ends up being about with playing a sport, is those relationships and the stuff that happens and the bond that's built. It's not about wins, losses, et cetera. Like, I tell you, we were 111-12 only because, like, applying for jobs, other people pointed that out to me. If you had asked me when I graduated what our record was in 4 years, I couldn't have told you. I could have told you about great experiences I had with my teammates, stuff like that. For us, recruiting wise at Muhlenberg with COVID, what was the second question again? See, bad question.
You knew it. Just complete your thought. It was, you know, how has COVID affected, you know, the recruiting process, you know, really obviously for 2021s and really even 2022s at this point.
I know, I did remember. Also, does it matter? The meeting time's running out. I don't know if that matters for you.
Yeah, we're okay.
Rapid fire question you at the end and get out of here.
For us, COVID's been interesting. Also, it's my fourth year. So my first couple of years, we brought in big recruiting classes. So our roster this year, we didn't have a ton of positional need. So we were going to have a smaller class anyways. So we've actually chosen to try to be a little bit more patient and hang out, because I think some guys are going to fall through the cracks with scholarship schools not giving them out this year. And I think there's two kind of kids, the ones that were going to get scholarships and have realized early it wasn't going to happen and wanted to commit. And those guys are all going to our sinus, playing for the Bears. And then there's also the guys that wanted to play their high school season and still have dreams of the late scholarship coming in. And I think are right about now starting to realize that's not happening. And so those are the guys we're having discussions with. We have one kid who committed early decision, a great kid from a good high school program, who's got some size, can shoot the ball, great character, great student. You know, those are the kind of guys we're trying to get for us. I mean, Jeff, you've coached against our team. What are the guys we recruit?
Make a lot of shots.
Or shoot a lot of shots, I guess. But always make them. No, but for us, like, you know, for point guards, we're trying to get guys that are 6 foot or bigger that can be playmakers, can create some type of advantage for themselves and for their teammates, probably from playing with Andrew Olson and then coaching Aaron Toomey, to two-time National Player of the Year point guards. One guy pass first, one guy more of a score first. Both good at creating advantages for the team. And then we try to recruit 6'4", 6'5", wings that can shoot the ball. And then 6'6", 6'7", bigs that can either roll to the rim or pick and pop, depending on what it is. And then we'll kind of tweak our offense to fit the personnel a little bit. But to me, you know, especially being at Amherst, seeing experience in the NCAA tournament, I think you got to be pretty big to win at the highest level. And so getting bigger was one of our first priorities when I got to Muhlenberg. And I would venture to say that our roster is much bigger now than it was. I don't know if we have a guy under 6'1", and the 6'1" guy is our best player.
One guy's pretty good.
He was rookie of the year and second team all league his freshman year. And then he was first team all league as a sophomore. And so kind of following the Hickson mold, get a really good point guard, give him some space to make plays and stay out of the way. Don't overcoach him, and he makes you look pretty smart. So I've tried to do that with our guy. Luckily it's paid off. He's made me look like a much better coach than I am. So hopefully can find a few more guys that can do stuff like that for us moving forward in the future.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think you hit on everything, and yeah, you do a great job. And yes, that point guard is a headache for a lot of teams in the league. So,
Teams in our league didn't like him in high school. So
I wasn't here yet. I just want everybody to know that. So we'll get you out of here real quick.
Wait, before we go to that though, I want to say though, like, one of the crazy things is Division III recruiting is so fickle. Like, you can have a great plan and not get a guy. You can have a terrible plan and the guy still comes. So one of our other guys, he ended up telling me over COVID on one of our calls, actually, the only reason he came to Muhlenberg was because his buddy was here and he wanted to have fun. And nothing about me, nothing about the program, nothing about the education. Like, his friend was like, he was a good player in high school. A lot of schools in our league actually really wanted him. He was in one of those recruiting reports. I had just hired Jake Brown as an assistant. I was like, here's a list of guys, call him. He was like, coach, I was at this event, I think this kid's too good. I was like, I don't care, just get a note from him, like, text him. So he shoots him a text like, hey, This is Jake Brown. I'm the new assistant at Muhlenberg. We'd love to talk to you. His response was, oh, my buddy goes there. When can I come visit? Comes and visits, has a good time, ends up like getting an early financial read, makes sense financially, like commits, literally the easiest recruiting thing. And it was one of those kids that other coaches afterwards are like, oh, like how long have you been recruiting him? Like we've been recruiting him for 6 months. Like, how'd you get him to go there? What? I'm like, his buddy was at the school. Like, so like D3 recruiting is crazy. You can ask all these questions. You can have great evals, but at the end of the day, people make decisions for funny reasons sometimes.
Yeah, recruiting is not an exact science. So rapid fire questions here, because I know you probably got some good answers and we got a quick sign off. But short answers here. Favorite venue you have ever attended for a recruiting event?
Can I go least favorite and say Spooky Nook?
You know, that I thought that was going to be on your top of the list for you.
It's too overwhelming for me. I have too much ADD. There's too much going on. I can't focus.
Favorite city you have visited while recruiting?
San Diego.
Nice.
Go-to meal while recruiting in the facility. Can't leave the facility. You got to get something in the facility.
I mean, the go-to to judge a place would probably be the soft pretzel. And then I'm also a big coffee guy, so coffee.
Go-to meal while recruiting on the road, so you can go to a drive-thru here.
Probably Chick-fil-A, but I'm also big into Wawa now.
Wow.
Converted. Yeah. Longest drive you have ever taken to recruit in one day?
Oh, probably like when I was at Amherst, we recruited a kid from Rumson Fairhaven. That was like a 4 or 5 hour drive. Went down, watched him. Former Dartmouth staff sat next to us, said, "You guys probably aren't excited we're here." And I was a little confused because we're not in their league. But the kid ended up going to Dartmouth and he's at Temple now, actually. But he was a great kid, great family. We didn't get him, but still worth the trip.
Go-to podcast while on the road recruiting?
I don't know. Too many. I like Chris Oliver's one lately. He's had a lot of high-level people on.
All right. Favorite basketball camp you have worked?
The Muhlenberg Prospect Camp.
Okay, second favorite.
Columbia Camp when Kevin Hovde hooked it up and we had Saturday free in New York City. I think it was Saturday was free in New York City. And then
back to back. Yeah.
My buddy Steve Ongley had one of his friends in the city that was a fringe NBA guy and we had some fun in New York.
Nice.
Doesn't sound like Steve.
No, not a fun guy.
Favorite recruiting event that you have attended?
I don't know if I have one. I like most of the events, to be honest. I like going out and evaluating guys. I really like seeing them live. That's probably one of the biggest things I've missed in COVID. Like, it's fine watching highlights. It's fine watching full games. But I really like being in the gym, seeing how they interact with their teammates, their coaches, what their body language is, what the level of competition they're playing against is. Like, sometimes it's hard on film to know who they're even playing against. Like, are they playing a good team? Are they playing a bad team? Are they actually as good as they look? So I like a lot of the events. I also really like working the Ivy League prospect camps. Part of that's probably growing up as a coach, being an assistant in the NESCAC. It was a chance to evaluate players. You got a chance to actually do a little bit of coaching. We all probably thought we were doing more coaching than we actually were. But also you got a chance to see guys from the league, build some relationships. I've actually stayed close with a ton of guys. We actually have a coaches group that we've been working with the guy from the head of our counseling center that are all head coaches now that we're all young assistants at the same time. So it's been cool to just stay in touch with those guys and build relationships with kids and get a chance to do some coaching. But I've enjoyed most all of the recruiting events that I've been to.
Love it. Well, listen, we'll get you out of here on this, Coach. Appreciate you coming on. Any final thoughts for the class of 21 or 22 and any advice you can give them as they navigate what we hope to never see again in recruiting in a pandemic?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I empathize with all of them. I feel bad for the situation they've been put in by COVID and also by the NCAA with the transfer waiver and then also the 1 year waiver. It's put them in a tough spot. I know talking to some of my friends that are at the scholarship level, they're not really giving them out the same way they would in a regular year this year. But if you think about it from their perspective, it kind of makes sense. They've either got guys coming back that are still on scholarship, so they don't have one to give out, or if they have one open, they have an opportunity to take a transfer that doesn't have to sit out, and they have college game film of them already. They know what they are. And if they don't work out, worst case scenario, it's 1 year, versus if they take a chance on a high school kid and they're wrong, that could be 4 years of a scholarship you don't have. So as much as it sucks for the high school kids, I also empathize with the college coaches on the other side of it. And hopefully kids can understand that as well. But really it's all about, you know, finding the best place for you and the best fit. We talk to recruits a lot of times about academically, socially, and athletically. You need all three. And if you're missing one, it's going to impact the other two and you're not going to achieve at the level you want. If, you know, you're not happy with your basketball, your academics and your social life are going to suffer. If you're struggling academically because you're in over your head or you're bored and you're not challenged, you're going to struggle socially and basketball wise. And then if you don't have a good friend group on campus, you don't have a good group of people to connect with, then you're going to struggle in the other areas. So really it's about you finding the best fit for you. I tell guys all the time, like, recruiting is not about me. It's about you. It's about you finding the best place. I think Muhlenberg's a great place. I think there's a lot of positives. I think there's a lot of benefits to coming here. Otherwise, I wouldn't work here as a head coach. But I also understand it may not be for everybody. You know, there's certain aspects of our program that are important to some people that are not important to us. You know, I'm to a fault not good at social media stuff. And I know a lot of programs do a great job with their social media and they're promoting their guys and stuff. And we don't. We also are probably underfunded compared to some institutions. So our guys might get less gear than other people, but we'll tell recruits in the recruiting process, you know, here's what it is here. Again, stealing this from Coach Hickson, like, we're not going to roll out a red carpet for you on a recruiting trip because there's no red carpet when you show up to school. We're going to show you what your experience is going to be like. And if that's what you want, that's awesome. Come here. And if it's not, then don't. Like, if you want the school that's going to have great social media and give you a ton of gear, then Muhlenberg is probably not the institution for you. If you're going to want a program that's going to really invest in you as an individual and try to connect you with alumni, connect you with other people on campus that are going to give you support and coach you up on the court, then Muhlenberg might be the right fit for you. And again, at the end of the day, like, my feelings won't be hurt if Muhlenberg is not the right fit for you. It's not for everybody. That's okay. It shouldn't be. Each kid, you know, I think I heard you talk about this on another podcast. Like, if you put one kid in a room with 10 coaches, you'll think there's 10 different kids in the room. If you talk to each coach, like, they all see different things. They pick up on different things. They value different things. I've actually had this talk with some of the coaches in the league. Like, some of them give me a hard time. They're like, oh, you have all these 6'4", 6'5", shooters. Like, how do you get all the 6'4", 6'5", shooters? I'm like, well, when we're looking at kids, like, if my assistant brings me a guy, my first question is, like, how big is he? And what position does he play? And can he shoot the ball? And if the answer is wrong on any of those, we just don't recruit the kid. That's how we end up with those guys, is we recruit them and we don't recruit other guys. If you're all over the map recruiting, if you're going to recruit the 6'2 wing and the 6'1 wing and 1'6'5 wing, well, you may or may not have a 6'5 wing. If you recruit 4 6'5 wings, you're going to end up with one. So kids, I think, can be just as intentional as coaches. Like, what's important to you in a school? Location, size, majors. You can be proactive and reach out to coaches. It really helps if you can find a personal connection to the coach. Like, instead of a random email, if I get an email from my buddy that says, hey, take a look at this kid, I'll probably look longer than if it was just a random one. We try to look at all of the emails, but you can be proactive. If you don't hear things back, like, follow up with people, especially if you're, a lot of times it's better to email the assistants because they have less on their plate than the head coaches. Like, I have to go sit in meetings. I have to do 900 other things. I have to schedule practice. I have to go through COVID protocols. I have to sit at the front desk and take temperatures later today. Like, there's a lot of things going on. So sometimes I'm a little slow on email, but be proactive if it's a school you really want and it's the right fit academically. And then two, like when you're talking to coaches, show that you're interested. Like, don't be afraid to put yourself out there and say you're interested, but also come with some questions, and not questions that can be answered on the website. Like, oh, coach, like, how was your team last year? We have an athletics page that has our record on it. It's pretty, are you really that interested in our school if that's your first question? But there are questions that'll be important. And then I think too, for recruits, like one of the best things now is even at the Division III level, almost all of our games are available online. They're live streamed. Like, if you're a recruit trying to pick a school, watch some of their games and see, is that the style you want to play? Like, is the coach calling every single play, or are they letting them get up and down and giving them freedom? Are they playing man? Are they playing zone? Are they pressing? Like, is it the right fit for you basketball wise? Coaches can tell you whatever they want sitting in a room, in a recruiting meeting. But when you watch a game, you actually see how they are on the sideline. You see how many plays they're calling. You're seeing how the team plays, and you can see if that's something that you want to be a part of, or maybe it's something you don't want to be a part of. But you know, just like we're getting video on guys, you can get video on teams and coaches and check it out and do your own research that way, which I don't think enough guys necessarily do.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, that was a good cap, you know, to this almost hour long conversation. You've been great, Coach Hop. I think you hit on a lot of things that we want to make sure student athletes are getting the perspective of, you know, college coaches. You know, what can they do to stick out? What should I be doing during, you know, COVID and the pandemic? So I think you hit on a lot of that, and this has been fun. This has been awesome. Definitely, obviously, you know, I cheer for the Mules every game except for two on the schedule every year. So
I'll say this too, though, for the younger guys that are not seniors this year, like, the better you are academically and the more you improve test scores, the more money you're putting in your pocket at a lot of these schools from merit money and academic aid. And also you're opening more doors. Like, there was some crazy stat that was going on Twitter the other day that was about, like, there's like 1.5% of high school basketball players playing college or something like that. And then it broke it down by GPA, like how many schools could even recruit you. And wow. So that's the other part that I think doesn't necessarily get emphasized to the younger guys enough, is that do your work academically and you're going to give yourself so many more opportunities basketball wise. I'm not saying like don't play basketball and be in the library all day, but like if you can put in an extra 5-10 minutes a day and study and like do all the homework and be prepared for the test, like you're going to open yourself up to so many more basketball opportunities. And then also like taking standardized tests, I don't know if they'll stick around or not. A lot of schools are test optional now, but prior, like increasing your score by 100 or 200 points could have been like a few thousand dollars difference in merit money per year. So you're talking about like $20,000 in merit money over 4 years to retake a test and do some studying. I know when I was 18, 19, I didn't want to retake the SAT. I was like, what's the point? I already have a decent score. In hindsight, I would have retaken it a few more times, because really that's just an investment in myself and having to pay less money at a lot of these institutions. So the academic side is just as important as the basketball side. And if for no other reason, then the better you are academically, the more opportunities you have to pursue basketball wise.
Yeah. And all great points. And, you know, it goes back to what we talked about, kind of the myth that, you know, if you go Division III, you know, you don't have scholarships, when if you put in the work in the classroom, you're going to be able to put yourself and set yourself up for a good opportunity. So this was awesome. I really appreciate your time. I don't know if Paul has anything else, but you've been great.
Yeah, that's it, man. Really appreciate you coming on. And look forward to doing this again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. I look forward to the day when I can get a PSB Philly guy to not go to Ursinus and to come up to Muhlenberg. But hopefully soon. It doesn't take too long.
Soon. You just got to you just got to recruit them, you know, get out there. We got to get more to your point. We got to get more 6'4", 6'5" shooting wings, and then we'll be good.
Yeah. It's a tough game if you're small and can't shoot the ball these days with modern basketball.
Sure is. And you have done a good job proving that. So thanks again, K-Hop, and we will talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so that you can stay tuned to future episodes. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at ProSkillsBasketball on Instagram and Facebook and at ProSkillsBball on Twitter. And if you'd like to find out more information about our teams, camps, clinics, or virtual basketball, check out our website at www.proskillsbasketball.com. We'll see you soon on another conversation.